Welcome to Community Exchange, an online radio broadcast discussing issues of interest to communities around the world. Community Exchange is brought to you by ComFest, the Global Community Film Festival. You can find more information about ComFest online at comfest.com. Today we are talking about social change. The world has gone through many changes in the past 100 years. The First World War, followed by an economic cycle of boom and bust, which led to the Great Depression of the 1930s, and World War II in the 1940s. By the 1950s, the world entered a new phase, focusing on recovery from decades of war and poverty. The 50s were marked by starting over, the baby boom, industrial growth, and the birth of the communications age. Of course, the baby boom of the 50s led to the youth revolution of the 1960s, when teenagers created their own culture and protested for peace and love and happiness. Unfortunately, the kids of the 60s didn't know how to achieve their lofty goals and got distracted for a while by sex and drugs and money. But the youth revolution did succeed in creating a social consciousness, although it lacked the economic resources and political power to create the better world many people dreamed of. Still, the desire for a better world continued in the 1970s with anti-war protests, social activism, the growth of feminism, and the never-ending fight for civil rights. The 1980s saw even more social progress and the first serious steps in the field of environmental responsibility. By the 1990s, there were numerous individuals and groups working for social change. Many movements matured into community groups and national and international organizations. But all these groups were working independently, and they still lacked political power and economic resources to put their progressive ideas into action. The new millennium, which began in the year 2000, marked a turning point for social, economic, and environmental groups that were working for a better world. In the new millennium, they began working together in ways that weren't previously possible. The information age and the Internet created new possibilities for communication and cooperation. In this brand new age, new forms of wealth were being created, and small organizations were finally gaining access to both political power and economic resources. Now it looks like social and environmental groups are taking a giant step forward compared to the baby steps of the last century. There's a new world emerging from the rubble of the old world order. A brave new world of social development and environmental consciousness is gaining momentum and making giant strides in its efforts to create a better world. In other words, a new world is coming of age, or at least that's how it feels. Change is possible. Progress is being made. The world is becoming one large, interconnected community, and communities are becoming the new frontier. Making the world a better place is now happening on a much larger scale. Social development is taking giant steps in the 21st century. People are changing the world for the better in ways that were never possible before. One example of the progress being made by groups working for social development, economic opportunity, and environmental management is the establishment of an organization called CSI, the Center for Social Innovation, located in Toronto and New York. Today we will be talking to Adil Dalla, the Director of Culture at CSI. Adil, perhaps you can begin by explaining to us, what is the role of a Director of Culture in an organization?
Perhaps maybe even explaining what the Director of Culture does, I can give you some insight as to what the Center for Social Innovation is to start. We are a co-working space in a community for people who are interested and desiring to change the world. We provide a variety of options to belong to our community. Some of those are space-based and some of those aren't. And ultimately what we do is we curate those who'd like to be part of CSI based on whether they have a social mission or not.
And what to curate? As in an art gallery, looking at the paintings coming in, you look for particular criteria?
Yeah, exactly. We, to belong to the Center for Social Innovation, and henceforward we'll just go with the acronym CSI, to belong to CSI, you need to apply. And in our application, one of the big questions that we always ask is, how is your work delivering or creating social impact? What's its relationship to social innovation? And ultimately, it's that answer in particular that we use to determine whether there's a place for you at CSI. Curation is exceptionally important because what it does is it develops a shared purpose. and it ensures that there's some sort of bond that connects everyone in a place, which is really one of the critical foundation points for collaboration to occur.
I noticed when we were coming to this place where we're doing the interview, a poster that said, well, office space for people who are changing the world. So I guess that's the philosophy of CSI?
Yeah, that's exactly it. You know, our story started with a need amongst a number of individuals and not-for-profits to have an office space where they were leveraging economies of scale. So the thought was, is rather than working in isolation, rather than working in what might be less than ideal circumstances, what happens if we all worked in the same space together, shared services and shared knowledge? What good could come out of that? And a lot did. And 9 years ago, you know, CSI started a 5,000 square foot space over at Queen of Spadina in Toronto. And we've since then grown to having over 100,000 square feet spread across our four locations, three here in Toronto and now one most recently in New York City.
And so there are a number of organizations all sharing office space. One can imagine there's a lot of, what would you call it, synchronicity or magical things that could happen when people meet in the hallway or discuss over coffee things they're doing. Is this the purpose for putting these people together in one location?
Well, I think that's exactly it. You know, a very interesting and probably apt comparative point might be like, what makes CSI different than the coffee shop? Of course, because anyone can go to a coffee shop, break out their laptop, and theoretically be working with other people. The difference is at CSI is that we are intentional about our desires for these people to actually collaborate and communicate with one another. So from everything to how we design the space, to the events that we create, to the community animation exercises that we perform, we are constantly trying to create new and innovative ways for our members to put their minds, hearts, and passions together to create something. Because fundamentally we believe that change is better when we're together. We are fundamentally better together. So the question is, and the role that we play, is how do you make that happen?
Now, just to focus in on a little more, what kind of organizations would be interested in approaching CSI for office space? I get the impression that it's not organizations that are selling something. It's not sales of mobile phones. It's not car sales, products, home furnishings. There's no products associated with most of the organizations here, I suppose. It's ideas and social purpose organizations. Can you describe a few organizations and the kinds of things they do?
Right. I'd love to. And actually, there are organizations here that are selling physical products. As I mentioned, the commonality is whether they're selling a service or a product or an idea, whatever that might be, the fundamental unifying point is that there's some sort of social impact involved with that. So, for example, you know, on the product side, there's an organization here at CSI Annex, our location at Bathurst and Bloor, called 21 Toys. And 21 Toys is developing products that are essentially known as empathy toys, where people can use them in classrooms and corporate settings, to learn about, through toys and through play, how they can be more compassionate and how they can be better learners and better listeners in the circumstances that they exist within. So that's something that's really product-driven. Another example would be an organization called Wanderer. So they create a product in the form of an iPad magazine. And specifically what their magazine does is create, they essentially are what I'd like to call like a modern museum. They curate artists and create beautiful magazines built around the stories of these artists. And they build commerce beside those stories for the ability for people to sell the works that they're talking about, which is really interesting because the idea of content meeting commerce is in itself a really nascent and innovative idea. There are organizations here like Purpose Capital, which helps organizations develop social finance and social missions. It's like large corporations that are interested with getting into the space but don't know how, and they need someone to bridge them there. That's what Purpose Capital does. And across the board, we have artists, we have non-for-profits, we have NGOs, we have social enterprises, and we have straight-up for-profit organizations. There really is the smorgasbord amongst our 450-plus organizations, and there's no real consistency. Some are focusing on the environment, some are focusing on office culture, some are focusing on policy change, but fundamentally, all of them are connected with this idea of systems change and creating the conditions and the movements that are required for us to have a holistic systems change and not just keep creating band-aids to fix our problems.
And the commonality then among all these different kinds of organizations is some kind of, it's not a vision, is it? But it's focused on what, social development? Is that a word that would apply to all the organizations, social development? Are all the organizations focusing on one common goal, or is it an amalgam of many purposes?
Well, what we're seeing here is really the early stages of a movement. You know, the words social development, social innovation, social enterprise, social impact, they all belong to a similar family. What's happened is because we're at the early stage of this movement, there is little consistency around the terminology. So I would say that what's uniting everybody is this desire to catalyze social innovation, this concept of social innovation. And whereas we might all be using different words to describe it, it really comes down to that that central concept and that central idea. And it's really exciting. Like it's really exciting because seeing CSI's role in this larger movement that's happening internationally is really something that attracted me to recently join the organization, because we have an incredible opportunity and one that we've taken on, full force to be leaders within that movement through providing the platform of our spaces and our membership and our community to take on those challenges and problems that the world really needs solving right now.
Well, I understand what you're saying, but you mentioned the larger movement internationally. What larger movement internationally?
It's a good question. There's a social innovation movement happening around the world, and we're seeing it sprout up in various countries, in every continent, really. And if people are unfamiliar with it, it might not be too surprising, because, as I said, I think it's really in its earliest stages. This is happening, but the thing is, kind of also to your question, it's very fragmented right now. So again, this is where we have a really interesting role with trying to bring it together. And this is an aspirational goal for the organization, right? We are called the Center for Social Innovation in part because we are a space, but really we desire to be at the center among and along with others in building this movement forward and building the idea that this concept I mentioned of systems change, and what does that mean? Like, systems change is really addressing the problems from the roots. It's not about creating solutions that necessarily create band-aids to our existing problems. It's about policy change. It's about radical innovation. These are the things that we're seeing spread up in many areas. And again, what's really interesting right now is the role that we can play along with others with trying to bring it all together.
Adil, I've been around for a long time. I've been part of many movements. I can't admit that I was there in the 60s. There were social revolutionary ideas there. They bubble in various forms, and then they take on different forms in the 70s and the 80s and the 90s. Another term was common, I think, in the 80s was the New Age. Now we're in the new millennium, and many of the elements that I saw in many of these different decades of social development, many of the elements are springing up again, but they do have a new form, a new look, more organized, for one, and I think CSI represents the organization of these many elements of social change, plus the Internet, which makes a lot of things possible that weren't possible before. So when I look around CSI, I see many elements that look familiar, but for once, it's organized, mm-hmm. and it's organizing. And there's another element, too, which was missing before, and that is the financial sector.
We recently just launched the Catapult Fund, which is a microloan program that we are working with a number of partners, including the Ontario government and TD Bank, Alternative Savings, Microsoft, KPMG Social Asset Partners on providing microloans for social entrepreneurs. So yes, so there is you know, to your point about what's changing, there is the awakening of the private sector on the importance and the credibility of this movement. And I think that's one of the things that's changed in you know, referencing back what's different in decades prior. You even look from an educational perspective, there are courses now on social entrepreneurship that didn't exist not that long ago. In fact, I actually did my MBA, you know, in the last 6 years, and there was one course, and it was around corporate social responsibility. It was so far behind where we're at now. It's just so impressive and exciting to see how we're seeing the change on an institutional standpoint as well. So you're right, like, things are organizing. And I think that there's credibility behind a lot of these things now. And you looking at, like, the connection with, like, some, you know, larger macro trends and movements, like, the Occupy movement is very much connected to what's happening with social innovation. The idea that, you know, wealth should be distributed more evenly and that we can create opportunities for the 99%, you know, these are things that are, a number of our tenants are working towards solving in their own way. So I think that, you know, much has changed, and perhaps most importantly, it's just, for me at least, this thought or the paradigm that it's up to us. It's up to us, the responsibility. The responsibility rests with us to do something, and it's possible now, and the systems and the organizations and the people are in place, and you're welcome to join us.
So you have an MBA, and you're applying your MBA in the field of social innovation. You are a symbol of this new kind of enterprise that's springing up for social development around the world.
Yeah, I would say so. It's interesting, like, you know, kind of coming back to the first question, which we tangented away from a little bit. You know, my role here is the director of culture, and there are a number of things that I learned while studying business in school, which I've been able to apply, but a number of things that I haven't been able to because a lot of it is revolves around new thinking. So, you know, let's talk about culture for a little bit. Culture is a competitive advantage. It's one that we all understand exists, and it operates like glue. When it's there, when it functions, it holds things together and we don't notice it. But when culture is bad, when the glue is bad, things fall apart, and all of a sudden we point to things like bad culture as being the reason for that. So it's fascinating because culture has long been understood to be important, but it's only recently that it's becoming understood as a competitive advantage and then something that you need to be intentional about. And one of the reasons for that is you look at some of the world's leading organizations and the emphasis they put on culture. Google is an incredible example of that. Google is consistently, year over year, being considered amongst the top, if not one of the top, best places to work. And the reason for that is they invest in their people and they invest in their culture through multicolored bikes and volleyball nets and free food, you know, their 20% time rule. You know, Google invests deeply in culture and the results show. And so there's this this interesting and really meaningful paradigm shift happening in the business world where people are saying, hey, we should be a little bit more intentional about this. We can't just let culture just kind of happen. And certainly it does, but if you can steer it, you can ostensibly have an enormous impact in your organization. So my role here at CSI as the director of culture is to be the steward of culture. You know, from an aspirational perspective, you know, our desire is that we can improve the experience of our community by focusing on delivering happiness. And that's where I come in to focus on that key part. We provide a number of things for our community in the form of shared services, which is really an operational thing, in the form of training and microloans, which is really like an acceleration piece, and in my side of things, in the form of happiness and member experience. You know, to round out this little piece, and to round out your question about the MBA school, there's no blueprint for what I'm doing. There are many examples that I can learn from, and there's pieces of customer service and human resources and marketing and, you know, how you tell the story of your brand that all are interconnected with this role, this director of culture role. For a large part, I'm learning as we go.
A director of culture in an organization is CSI might be the only organization I've heard of that has a director of culture. I've worked in many organizations that had a director of communications, a director of corporate affairs, these kinds of things. I suppose they were in the position to affect their employees the way that you are affecting employees, but they never considered it culture. I remember in one movement in the 70s, we were talking about culture, and someone said, well, what is culture? And someone else said, well, culture is us.
Mm-hmm.
Does that work with what you're doing? It's like you're the director of us. You're the director of the people here, human resources, human relations.
Yeah, well, I think that's an apt way of describing it. Usually I describe culture as just our DNA. Who are we? What do we stand for? What do we believe in, and what do we want to do? And so that is what one's culture is, right? And it's interesting. I think often culture actually stems from the founder, from the highest point of leadership. Prior to me, I would say that our CEO, Tanya Sherman, has effectively been the director of culture. And I still very much think she is, and I'm working now in partnership and collaboration with her around that role specifically, because naturally as the organization grows, she just can't do everything.
One of the roles that I've heard that is your responsibility as director of culture is community animation. Can you describe what community animation is?
Community animation, it's interesting. It's something that is in some ways easily understood. We understand what those words mean, but in tandem, it's something of a still kind of a new idea for people. And it definitely has a lot of, a lot of connections to what we've previously understood as a community organizer. And so similar to both, it's this idea that there's an individual or individuals who have their ear to the ground, who are intentionally weaving connections, who are deliberately telling stories, and who are taking their energy and their enthusiasm on a soapbox and finding ways to bring people together around a shared purpose and scale that purpose and that collective energy forward. In a very literal example, I think a community animator is the host of a party. I think, we arrive at a party and the person hosting it has invited you in, has provided an array of hopefully delicious food and drinks for us to enjoy, and has said, I think you should really meet this person because you two have a lot in common. Or have I told you about what this other person is doing, as you're eating cheese off the cheese board? Like, that, it's the community animator for me very much is the host. And I think, that's one of the things that's really core to our DNA here is that we've always been interested in this idea of having hosts in our spaces. People who are responsible for deliberately weaving those connections and responding what the needs are of our community.
So as director of culture and community animator, you function as the host for organizations that come to CSI, and you work with them. I hear two things in what you're saying. You're concerned about their happiness and how to make them happy in what they're doing, but you're also concerned with purpose. It's the purpose of what they do and why they're here, and the purposes of many organizations, and you can introduce people who have similar purposes or can benefit from communicating with each other. So I see your analogy, the host at the party. But so the purpose of these organizations and the happiness of these organizations are your main concerns?
Well, I think happiness leads. Sorry, I think purpose leads to one's happiness.
Ah.
There's a really interesting study that was done in Australia where it found that people who had a sense of purpose tend to live longer. And I buy it. I believe that it's one of the reasons that explains why people when they retire, they look forward their entire lives to having, life after work, and then they quickly deteriorate. And the reason is they've actually, in those cases, my belief is that they've actually lost a sense of purpose that they've had running through most of their life. So I believe that being purpose-driven, purpose-minded, purpose-filled, is a part of the recipe for one's happiness.
And in the world of social development, there are lots of purposes.
Absolutely.
There's lots of work to do.
Right. And, fundamentally, we all want to belong. I think that's one of the basic human needs. And, having a shared purpose is important because it means that we have something that we belong to. And so that's one of the reasons why it's really important to instill it and to remind people of it and then to celebrate it as we continue to have success along the way.
I love all this. I wish every organization I had worked in had thought this much about what is required for an organization to succeed. and purpose and not retiring, this all makes sense, but now how do we get to happiness?
Right.
In an organization where people are working 8 hours a day to try to pay the bills. How do we find happiness in an organization?
Well, you know, it's a combination of a number of factors. So let's talk in some traditional business speak. One part of happiness is just actually the recruitment. It's who's surrounding you. So what makes a good party? Other great people who are there. So a lot of my work right now is around how and who are we recruiting to be part of our community. Another part of happiness is like, where do I belong in the community? Where do I fit in? Who should I know? And so a lot of my work right now revolves around like onboarding and orientation. When someone joins our community, you know, the work that I'm doing along with my team is trying to understand how do we build belonging from day one? You know, what are the steps that we can take to instill someone with a sense that they're part of this and that they're not, you know, they join and then, but there's some, it's a struggle for them to find their way in. You know, one of the things to happiness that I think is also, you know, being largely part of my role is the notion of play. And I can't state the importance of play enough. You know, just because we're growing up doesn't mean we don't like to play anymore. You know, you go back to our times as students, how much we enjoyed and looked forward to those 15 to 30 minute opportunities to go run outside with our friends. Those were important, and that we should still live and embody the elements that drove the notion of play. So I'll give you a really tangible example of something that I've done here at CSI. I created something called Project Ukulele Gangsterism. And Project Ukulele Gangsterism, or PUG for short, what we do is surprise ukulele concerts in different places of the city of Toronto. The idea was really simple. Could we get a bunch of people to come together, learn an instrument, and deliver happiness? You know, I wasn't sure how successful we would be. This is one of my middle-of-the-night ideas, and I thought maybe if we get 5 or 10 people, we'll see where it goes. So I put an email out to the community saying, you know, we're doing this, are you interested? And our first hack on Toronto, you know, we did it in the subway system, and we had 40 people join us. Next week, actually, we're doing our next one. I can't tell you where. It's still a secret. You know, our membership, our list of people now is close, and we just broke the 100 mark.
In terms of ukulele players.
Now, here's the amazing thing. Most of these people actually 75% of the people didn't know how to play the ukulele before, which is kind of the beauty to the ukulele. It's just actually a really simple instrument. It's accessible, it's affordable, it's easy to learn. The reason why I kind of bring up this example is because now if you go to all of our spaces, you'll find people with ukuleles or ukuleles lying around. These are instruments for joy that we have in our spaces. And so we play with intentionality as part of PUG, but we also just play because the tools are there for us to play with. And it's amazing when you give people a sandbox to enjoy, they'll take you up on it. The thing is most people forget to build the sandbox first. And that's where, you know, when I think about play, these are the type of things that I think about.
That's a wonderful way to think about it because it brings us back to the first point that CSI provides these facilities and takes care of business and focuses on the money and make sure there's a good financial foundation. And you're saying once that foundation is laid, then the organization can do these other things, social development, purpose, and even be happy on top of all the things they're doing.
Yeah, absolutely. I've had experience working in many environments in my life. All of them have been good experiences, but one of the things I consistently found was that going to work wasn't really enjoyable for a number of people who I met along the way. And I was able to, just through observation, and I'm going to state that this is very unscientific in my own observation, but I was able to observe that the people who didn't really enjoy coming to work every day weren't exactly the best people doing the jobs. And it's simple, but I think it's fairly clear when you're happy to come to work, you are a better worker. You know, that's at least the theory or the thought that I'm running with, you know, as I kind of carry out this director of culture role. I want people to be excited to come to CSI because the reason why they're at CSI is to change the world. So if in any way I can help them by doing that, by elevating their experience and their levels of joy, then I'm going to do everything I can to make that happen. And I think that's what makes, you know, the Center for Social Innovation quite different and quite unique, because we do see this co-working concept has really proliferated in the last 5 years. When CSI started 9 years ago, They were one of the first. And now there are many. You know, in New York we just opened and there's 40 other co-working spaces there. And each might be good in their own way, but I know what we stand for and what's unique about us is this idea of animating our community and our people and bringing them positive experiences as a means to enable them to do a better job.
Adil Dalla, Director of Culture for CSI. Words of wisdom about purpose and happiness in the work situation and how this can all lead to a better world. Thank you, Adil.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Community Exchange is brought to you by Comfest Radio.